Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to share episode 4 with you today. Jeff is one of the first people in education that I met and befriended, and he's inspired me and celebrated me. I loved this opportunity to sit down and celebrate him. He is such an incredible human, takes so many risks and leaps of faith with just knowing that things are going to turn out okay. I can't wait for you to listen to this episode. So I really hope you sit back, kick back. Yes, and there's a little snippet to what's to come, and enjoy this session.
This is the Elemental Educator, the podcast where we kindle the fires of dialogue with the alchemists of education. We're here to embark on a journey where ancient wisdom meets the contemporary world of education. On Elemental Educator, we dive into the deep waters of adaptability, feel the grounding earth of core values, ride the swift winds of change, and ignite the fiery spirit of risk-taking. Fire, earth, wind, water. This is the Elemental Educator, and now your host, Tyler Como.
All right, Alchemists, welcome back to another episode of Elemental Educator, and I am so excited to be here with Jeff Hibbard. Jeff, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, it is wonderful to be here, my friend.
Yeah. Now, Jeff, you and I have some history. We go back. You were actually in my first practicum, and then we ended up working in the same division together, and just a small world. It's so nice to have you back here.
It is. And boy, it's been a long time since we got to have a good long chat, and I am really excited to do this.
And I'm so excited to have that too. Now, I know a little bit about your journey, but not everything. And our listeners wouldn't know your journey. So I'm curious to kick off learning about you, your background, and how you got to where you are today.
Okay. I did my undergrad in music and my BEd in education as well. And I did both of those in Ontario. And initially I taught for maybe a year and a half to 2 years, somewhere in there, in Southern Ontario with York Region as a Southern York Region District School Board. And this was in 2011, 2010, 2011. And I was just finding I'm getting clobbered by teachers who have been teaching for 10 years. I'm going into interviews, I'm doing my best, but I just don't have the experience. And so I cast a wider net for jobs. I ended up in Lac-La-Biche, Alberta on a temporary job there, and I've been in Alberta ever since. I ended up teaching for 3.5 years with the Northern Lights Division before coming down to south of Calgary in the Foothill School Division, and that's where you and I met, my friend. And actually, we met each other, not long after I got there. That was only my second year in the division when we ran into each other. And now I'm coming up on, is this year 9? I think this is year 9 I'm in now in this division, and year 14 overall.
Wow, that's quite the amount of time. And so you have a unique perspective because you went from Ontario education to Alberta education. And what was that jump like for you?
It was crazy in some ways because I'm a brand new teacher. I flew out here the day after I turned 25. And it was one of those crazy things where I'm trying to wrap my head around not just the different curriculum out here, which, you know, in many ways is quite similar to Ontario's, but there's enough, especially when you get to stuff like social studies and geography, and there's enough regional difference that you got to really work at that. And also wrapping my head around the certification. So for anybody who's listening who may have gone through the system in Ontario or in Alberta, that like these days it's a 2-year BEd for the most part. You're looking at about 24 months of your life. I was one of the last single year cohorts in BEd in Ontario. They phased it out 3 or 4 years after I graduated.
I think you're talking after degrees for that, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So that's a 4-year undergrad plus the Bachelor of Education.
There you go.
So I did 5 years of post-secondary, and I had a little bit of extra because I lucked into going to one of the only universities in Ontario for my ed that had one-to-one correspondence with Alberta's universities. And so I still had to take a few courses to eventually bump myself up to that 6 years. But yeah, so that was a little wild, was just even the certification process. Like I had my interim certificate and my permanent eventually, no problem. But it actually had to go back back a couple of years after I got here and just take a little more coursework just so I could bump myself up to the salary grid level everyone else was at.
Yeah. And so along that journey where you obviously did your first degree and then you went into your after ed degree and then, you know, you had your year and a half, 2 years in Ontario, jumped over to the Alberta side. At what point along that journey did it click and you said, okay, yep, teaching is for me and it's where I want to be?
I think by the time I knew I was willing to move away from the place I'd lived for 25 years-ish, I knew this was a pretty important thing. Since I started teaching, like those first couple of years, they were really tough. Like I waffled back and forth, especially in my first full-time, like a long-term guest teaching position. It was a tough gig and I spent more than one night wondering, did I make the right choice? And all I could really think of was, I don't really know what else I'd like to do, but ideally I do like this and there are some really wonderful parts to this. And so I just stuck with it out of stubbornness in some ways. And eventually it bore fruit. And I think some of that too was trying to figure out exactly where the real passion of it for me was. I don't know if I've ever told you this. I actually trained as a grade 7 to 12 band and history teacher.
No, that's new.
Back in the day. Yeah, that was what I originally thought I was going to do with my life. Like I did my second practicum in a high school and all of that. And I really thought, yeah, I'm just going to be a band director because, you know, I'm a lapsed brass player and I love what I do. And I'm like to nerd out like that. And just in basically every job I had from the second long-term occasional position I had onwards, every job I've had, I was teaching some version of kindergarten to grade 3 music. It just happened. And after about the third or fourth year, I was doing it, I stopped and I looked at myself and said, you know what? I'm getting good at this and I like this. I can be a goofball with these kids and I can have a lot of fun with these guys. And I you're an admin, so you obviously know there's a big element of play in those younger grades, especially. And I don't think I really realized what I was missing in that sense. And then I was like, oh, that K-3 music. Yeah. And so now I consider it as I'm in K-6 now, and I have no intention of leaving K-6 anytime soon. I have thought to myself on occasion, I would go back as far as junior high, or I would go back to a junior high setting if it was fine arts based, because I had some wonderful experiences here in this division, especially with some of the junior high kids working with musical theater and drama and vocal music and that sort of stuff. But yeah, I turned into a Div 1, Div 2 teacher almost by accident. And then I was like, yeah, you know what? I like it here.
And that's your personality, just that big, friendly, bubbly guy. There is so much to unpack in what you just said. And we're gonna be jumping all over the place here. I can already feel where this is going with us. I want to go all the way back to Ontario, and you're sitting there and you're looking at this Alberta position and you're thinking, oh man, do I do that? Do we move? And that's a huge risk to take, right? You're uprooting and moving somewhere totally different. You're moving across the country. So in that process, what led you to that risk? How did you go about that risk process?
Some of it was me looking at the situation in Ontario. I haven't kept as many tabs on some of that, the education situation there since I left as I'd like to. But I do know that at the time, we were graduating way more teachers in Ontario than we could possibly hire for, even in the greater Toronto area. So think like Toronto, the Toronto District School Board, York Region, Peel Region. So think about that whole area for anybody who's not familiar. That's something like 8 million people. And it's enormous. And that part of Canada could not keep up with the sheer number of teachers who were graduating every year. I had people I graduated with who somehow found work in their division they grew up in. I had people who traveled across Ontario, some who went to Quebec. I knew one guy, I don't know what he's doing now, but like in 2011, he was working in China. And I know a few people who just like straight up dropped out of the field altogether not long after they graduated. So anyway, there's a little bit of precedent for this in my own family. It's a running joke in my family that the next generation always grows up across the country from the previous one. My mom's family, they immigrated to Saskatchewan 100 plus years ago. My mom's parents, or my mom's dad in particular, moves to BC, meets my grandmother, and they have kids and all that. My mom and my dad grew up in the same town on the coast of BC. They move out to Ontario because my dad works for the Bay and got a job there, or got a job out at their head office. And then there's me and my brothers, and actually 7 weeks before I moved out, my younger brother, who is my other favorite Tyler in the world, besides you, my brother Tyler moved out to Alberta. He was a young budding electrician just getting started, and he had work up in the oil sands area setting up the site. And so there was that precedent too. I was like, oh, you know what? Like, I'm ready to make the next jump in my life. It's not like nobody in my family has done this before. And there was always that feeling of, if this doesn't work out, I could always come back to Ontario. I don't want to. If this works out, I could maybe. But yeah, it was a big roll of the dice. So my wife and we had been dating for, I want to say, almost 3 years at that point. And that was a big risk. We had to roll the dice on that one. And we're like, hopefully we can make it work. And I'm not going to lie, that first time I got out there, that was, I arrived at Edmonton and I had come out of Toronto in a snowstorm. We landed in Edmonton and the principal's husband picked me up and we drove 3-ish hours to Lac La Biche, and it was February 24th, 2012. And it was dark and sitting there with my cat in her carrier on my lap. And what in God's name have I just done? And then after about the first couple of days, the first week in the class, I was like, okay, everything's going to be fine. We'll see how we do. And even then, there was no guarantee that was going to pan out because I was covering a maternity leave. Like, I flew halfway across the country to cover a maternity. And I guess I did a good enough job because the admin recommended me to admin in another school who needed a new music teacher. And that turned into a 3-year job. And that gave me enough time to not just cut my teeth as an educator, but it gave me time to figure out what I actually wanted. And then we took another big risk in moving away from there and coming down here. Yeah, that was a really long answer. And
no,
I don't know if I actually properly answered your question.
That's totally perfect. Yeah. That's such a good perspective in how many risks were actually unfolding within the single risk that you initially took. And that process, what was the buy-in like for the people around you? So your girlfriend at the time, now your wife, your parents, your brother sparked that initiative of moving to Alberta. I hope you like that little pun, spark, with the electrician there. But
yeah. I'll make sure to play that back for him.
There we go. Yeah. And what was the reception of the people around you like when you sat them down for the first time and said, so I'm going to move to Alberta for a maternity contract and there's no guarantee I have a job after?
You know what? Credit where it's due. My family were incredibly supportive. I've always been very lucky in that sense. My parents got it, I think, right away. Like, they were sad in the one sense because they liked having me close by, but I'd had to move back in with them after I graduated. And nobody wants to be that age and staying with their parents if you can help it. I was the guy who never came home during the summers in university. I really liked living on my own. And so, you know, they could see that I really needed that opportunity. The one brother who was already in Alberta, he was just like, cool, we're going to be 7 hours away, but maybe we could visit, because that's just how he rolls. And I love him. My other brother was he in university at that point? I can't remember. He would have been either graduating high school or finishing university. And he thought, I was like, yeah, cool, I trust you, you'll be great. Well, my girlfriend and I had a long talk, because again, we'd been together for almost 3 years at that point. I was like, we can survive this. We can survive just about anything. And that was probably the hardest part, is because there was a lot of uncertainty there. We'd never spent nearly that much time away from each other to that degree at that distance. And we just found a way. She came out and visited at Easter that year, and we just found a way to try and to make it work as well as we could.
So she didn't even go with you. Yeah. She didn't even go.
No, not initially. No, which is a story about risk onto herself as well. So when it became, so as a bit of a tangent here, as when it became clear I did have a more full-time contract lining up for September, she was like, I guess I'm coming out too. And as luck would have it, she interviewed at the same school because they had a counselor positioning opening, and that was up her alley. Like, she So she applied for that and she got it. And we ended up being coworkers for 3 years. So there's a big risk involved on her part too. That was a spark on her end, but that was, again, that was an enormous roll of the dice in hindsight.
That is. And yeah. It's incredible to have that support around you. And there's many risks that we take where the people around us don't always buy in and you don't always get that support. And when you have that support, it makes that decision a lot easier because it really mitigates or gets rid of the pressure, right? Because you have that support system around you. So I'm so thankful you had that support.
Yeah. Oh, me too. Like I'm even just talking about it now. I think about it. Wow. There were several turns there where you could say I won the lottery on that one. It's a little terrifying now to think about like how many things could have gone wrong. You're 25 and you just want to spread your wings a bit and you don't. And some of it, I think, is you force yourself not to think about it too much because you might think yourself out of it.
Yeah. And you just went with the flow and with the current and found your own path and it worked out for you.
Yep. Okay. I will say there's absolutely an element of luck involved. And I think you'll agree with this. It's one of those more like you have to make your own luck sort of things.
Absolutely.
Like opportunity will come your way one way or another, but you can be unprepared for it.
Absolutely.
And so there was definitely some luck involved in there. I'm going to give myself a little bit of credit because I'm not always very good at that, admittedly. I'm going to give myself a little credit in being as prepared for the opportunity as I could make myself.
And not only did you have that luck and that opportunity, you made that opportunity because you found that position. It was there.
Yeah, like
I
had to seek it out. Yeah. And I would not have done that if I had not said, okay, screw it. I'm going to cast a wider net.
And you just said, what do we have to lose? If things go wrong from earlier, I guess I just go back. And recognizing that when that mistake happens or that something goes wrong or that risk doesn't work out, things are okay.
Yeah. And I still have to talk myself out of that tree sometimes that like the world will not end if this one thing fails.
Now, I remember, and this is a short little tangent off of that, but it was your first time skiing. And we went to Norquay together and you had the lesson booked. And boy, that's a whole nother risk in itself, right? Because we're not uprooting and moving, but we're putting ourselves on a mountain, right? And we're uncontrollably saying, I really hope I don't go too fast or I hope I know how to stop.
And you were, and okay, for Tyler's listeners, he was so patient that day. Oh my God. I am not an outdoor winter sports kind of person. And he checked in on me every so often while I'm having this little lesson on the beginner stuff.
That
and
was
he,
one of the hardest like, days yeah. of my life.
Oh my God.
No, it was a blast. It was so fun. We checked it off your bucket list. And I love that you have that bucket list where you go out and challenge yourself to do new things. So that's really awesome. But one thing with that is, so you take this risk, you make this big move, you go Ontario to Alberta. What changes? What changes when you land in Alberta and you start your new job? And how did you have to make adjustments along the way to adapt to those changes?
That's an excellent question. I think about this. You know what? Some of it was the uniqueness of the position. It was a K-3 music position, and it was all music, which isn't that common in Alberta. Even 10 years ago, it wasn't that common. But it was one of the first times I really got to sit down and, hey, I can actually really hone my craft just as a music teacher, not as music plus homeroom, not as music plus other phys ed or literacy pushing or whatever. This was a golden opportunity to hone myself as a music educator, which was my dream. And I recognized that early. Like it was like, again, it was like, it wasn't actually 100% music. It was like 85% or something, but it was overwhelmingly music.
We round that up. We're not math teachers.
Oh, yeah.
We round that up.
I'm a math teacher now, but that's,
well, there we go.
But yeah, so I took that opportunity and you know what, the changes were at least kind enough that like, I didn't notice all of them at once. I noticed them kind of bit by bit and I was able to tackle them one at a time. So the new, like the dry winters I was ready for, just the different culture out here in terms of, you know, a very urban location that I'm coming from to a pretty rural place like Lac La Biche, for anybody who doesn't know, is, I want to say about 3,000, maybe 3,500 people in the town itself, maybe 10,000 total if you include the surrounding reserves and whatnot. The smallest place I'd lived in before that was 55,000 people. And that was an enormous change. That was the only time in my career I have been able to walk to school and had my students drive by me and wave on the way there. That was a real trip for, you know, this kid from Ontario. But I knew that those jobs weren't that common. And I knew that this one wasn't going to last forever. And I knew that this was the opportunity. I don't know if you've ever seen Hamilton or heard the music from it, but yeah. So Hamilton wasn't released at this point, but in retrospect, I think the phrase I'd be looking at is, I am not throwing away my shot.
And what you're describing is that sheer optimism of, I'm not just going to dip a toe, I'm going to jump into this and see where I land, and recognize that when you take that jump, wherever you end up landing, it'll work itself out and it'll be all right.
And some of it too is that I just came halfway across the entire country to get here. Why am I going to start half-assing this now?
And what do you have to lose? Because if things go totally exactly. wrong and you go back to Ontario, you don't have to see these people anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if it didn't work out, you'd just be like, oh, remember that asshole from that 1 year? Yeah, no.
There you go. So this incredible journey of that big risk to seeing all that change, along that way, you had to have figured some things out about yourself and who you are.
Yeah. That was that first time coming out was when I knew that I was capable of finding my legs as a teacher, because I was suffering from self-confidence a little bit in that respect. I'd mentioned the interview stuff. My first like full-time position in Ontario, I will tell you right now, I did not know what I was doing. It was from like St. Patrick's Day to the end of the year, and I was floundering and I did the best I could. But, you know, I think about that one a lot, and it's a mix of cringe and also like just wanting to give younger me a hug and be like, it's going to be okay. I know you will get through this, because that was a really hard one. That, you know, and I'd had a couple of more positive experiences before coming out there, but I think about that first one out in Lac La Biche was when I really started to find my legs as an educator.
And did you learn anything along the way of that journey that impacted how you teach?
Oh yeah. Everything from just like straight up pedagogical techniques to straight up techniques that I work on in the classroom, like to this day, in terms of like actually delivering the content, to just how I approach my kids. And I'll be really blunt. I certainly did not figure it all out in that one gig or the one after. And I'm still figuring it out. But that was where I really started to really find my voice as a teacher and figure out like, how do I want to approach all of this? That was the first time I really started to be able to, for lack of a better phrase, with those youngest kids, be able to clown around with them a little bit and just be able to loosen up and be silly. Because there is an element of needing to be silly a little bit, especially in that K-3 area.
And there's so much to be said for that building effective relationships. It's right into the teacher competencies. It's right into the leadership competencies. It's right into the superintendent competencies that we have to build good relationships. And what you're sharing is so powerful, that taking that leap for yourself and showing you that things were going to be okay, you're bringing that into your classroom and you're showing kids that you can be yourself and you can take those leaps and be risky and put yourself out there and things are going to be okay.
Yeah. And that's a big building block that I still use today, and it's grown and changed and tweaked a little bit since then. But so these days I'm teaching mostly a grade 5 homeroom, but still the kindergarten to grade 4 music at my current school. And one thing I tell my kids, both the homeroom and the music ones, is if you make a mistake, you keep going. And Mr. Hibbard makes mistakes all the time. And you can especially ask my grade 5. I've had a couple of math lessons where I know it in my head and then I've completely bombed it in front of them. And I stop and I look at them, guys, can I try that again? Yeah. But that is just it. We are going to make mistakes. And the kids, I think that's something that educators struggle with sometimes, is making mistakes in front of the kids. But it helps to humanize us, for the kids to see that, yeah, like, my teacher does have stronger and weaker areas that they're more comfortable with. Like, my grade 5s know that I'm not that. They knew me, I was, as their music teacher before they got to my homeroom. And so they know. But they can also see, I love music, but also I love the way that math makes the world make sense. We have gone on several tangents in science about space and black holes because we like to talk about that stuff. And it's that, again, it's that humanizing aspect of It doesn't have to be exactly as the book dictates it. There are beats we have to hit in that sense, but how you get there can be very much up to you. And if you're going to trip and stumble a couple times along the way, there's nothing wrong with that. It's what you do next that is the important thing.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And one of the hardest things for people to do, teachers, leaders, anybody in any position, is to admit they were wrong on something, because there's that sense of pride in not wanting to show that you're vulnerable and make that mistake. And really what you're sharing here is your grounded mindset, Jeff, and you're really getting into meat and potatoes about it's so important for you to have that connection and to be vulnerable in front of people. And with that, you get vulnerability from them, and you see them in their moments where they're making their most growth because they're willing to take that risk. You've created that space where it's okay.
Yeah. And as you and I both know, we have a lot of kids who really need to be able to show that vulnerability to somebody.
100%.
Especially in the wake of the last 3 or 4 years.
100%. Jeff, it's so powerful that we have that conversation around risk-taking and being yourself and grounding yourself in those values of putting yourself out there. And by the sounds of it, where you're at now and where you've been, it's been so easy and smooth sailing from there, hey?
Absolutely not. No. That's the thing about risk-taking, is that you take a risk and it might pay off, but sooner or later you're coming across something where you have to take another risk. And yeah. So I'm going to preface this by saying, in spite of everything I've said, I am not generally a big risk taker.
I totally disagree.
But what I will say is that risk taking is actually incredibly scary for me most of the time when it comes to this stuff. And I tend to play things fairly safe in that a lot of the time. And then every so often I take a big swing. And this is a story about that, basically. Here we are now. It's 2024. So I want to say 3 years ago, setting the stage here, this is 2020 to 2021. We are in the depths of the pandemic. We have gone through the first long winter, and we're still masking all the time. And we've been allowed to start singing in classrooms again, which means I've gone from being able to have 30% of my bag of tricks to 70, 60%. So an improvement, but still not awesome. And then I'm splitting my time between two schools. This is the important part. I'm splitting my time 50-50 between two schools after several years as a part-time permanent. And so this is the first time in 4, maybe 5 years that I've been back to full-time. But the one school is the permanent side, and then the other school is a thing. And the school I'd been at for a few years had said to me, we've got stuff coming up with what's going on. And then the school I just started at that year came to me and said, hey, we've really enjoyed having you. We would like to open up. We are trying to open up a position that is like a 0.5, that is Career and Tech Foundation, CTF. We'd like to weld it to your 0.5 music and have you do both as a 1.0. And I initially said no. And I will. And so the context around here is, it's like May 2021. I am exhausted. I have just been through not the worst year of my career, but certainly the most tiring. I have a young child who is a little shy of their second birthday at this point. My wife has gone back to school is wanting to go back to school for her master's degree. And everybody, like you guys know, we all went through that year with COVID, and it just felt like one thing too many. And I didn't think I could do it. And so I initially said no. And within 24 hours, I was sitting there thinking, I think I just made the biggest mistake of my career. Part of that was because I'm sitting there and thinking, this is a full-time contract. This would get me back to full-time permanent. So there's the practical angle to that, coupled with my other school had said, look, because of how staffing's working out this year, we actually have to reduce your contract to the point where I would have lost benefits. And when you've got an almost 2-year-old, that's a big problem. So there were practical considerations. But also there is that bit of, wow, I turned this down. I said no. And that really tore me up for a few days. Like it was a very difficult few days. And truthfully, I didn't handle it super well at the beginning. I was not a fun person to be around for a day or two. I called my admin at this school that was offering, that talked to me about the 1.0. And I asked them a few follow-up questions. And the last one I asked was, okay, that's all good to know. Is it too late to change my mind and apply? And my admin, thank goodness, said no. You can still apply. Because I think they still really wanted me for it. And so I went in and I did my homework on this because I'd never taught CTF before. I'd barely even heard of it. Talked to a couple people that I knew taught it at other schools. And I went in and I laid out a game plan for what it could look like piloting it in our school that year. And I got the job. And when I think about that one is, I talked about how I'm fairly forgiving of myself in that first year as an educator. I'm a little less forgiving of myself on that one because as I looked back then, I was like, I know how hard that year was, but man, I just about shot my whole foot off with that one. And I am very glad that I had a couple of people around me. I'm trying to remember, I can't remember if it was me who initially came to the conclusion like this is a really bad idea or my wife who said to me, I think that you're making a mistake on this one. I think you should try again. Like, I truly forget which one of us it was, but whichever one of us came to that conclusion first, the other one came to it pretty quickly after. And I thank my lucky stars that I came to that I arrived at that change of heart when I did, because I think it's been a very, it was a risk, but it was also a big opportunity for growth.
And it depends on which way you look at that, right? You have a choice to make in that moment. And initially, you looked at that moment and you thought, nope, there's no way I can do that one. And you turned it down, right?
I will say, I think at least some of that was just chalked up to like how grueling that year was. Like I couldn't possibly wrap my head around initially, like even contemplating taking on a new subject after everything we've gone through in the previous year. Like, I do think that played a role in it. And I think if somebody had come to me in, say, 2018, 2019 and said, hey, we'd like you to try this, I think I would have been game right away. And so I think some of it was the circumstance. But yeah, even now I'm just like, man, I am really glad I changed my mind on that.
And you sit here and you say you're not a risk taker, yet here you are. Risk after risk. Now, you're not jumping out of airplanes. I think that's coming in a couple of years from you here. But then we ended up changing our perspective. So what changed? What in that moment in those 2 days clicked or switched where you stopped looking at it from a perspective of I can't do that, and you started looking at it from a perspective of I think I can try?
Honestly, some of it was I think that life was going to throw me off the dock whether I was ready or not. Like I said, some of the stability in the other part of my job was disappearing. And so I realized that the choice before me wasn't stay in this job and try to find some way to grow it elsewhere. It was, I have a big opportunity here and my safety net isn't as big as it was, as I thought it was going to be. I may as well go for it.
Jeff, that's it. So heavy with me, because when I took a leap, I left my first ever permanent teaching contract. I was stable. I was loving what I was doing. I was just teaching science and phys ed. It was my jam. And I wanted to get into administration, and that job opened up and it was a longer drive. And I was sitting there and my decision was, oh my God, I'm going to sit here if I don't take this and wonder what if, and I'm never going to know how that opportunity would have panned out. And I'm never going to know what opportunity I missed out on by leaving as well. But yeah. I got to choose my fate and I made that decision to take that jump. And what you're describing is you made that decision to take that jump. And by the sounds of it, things turned out pretty well.
Yeah. And we talk again, and like, again, coming back to that, some of it is you make your own luck. I'm going to use another musical reference here because that's who I am. You ever watch Into the Woods?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so for anybody who doesn't know, first of all, check it out because it's brilliant. It's a bunch of Grimm's fairy tales that get woven in and out of each other. And Act One is the fairy tales as you know them. And Act Two is everything goes to hell after happily ever after. Quite badly. But at a couple of points in the show, there are bits where all the characters from these fairy tales are coming across the stage, and they offer little nuggets of wisdom or perspectives that they've come across thus far in the story. And the one I always think about, and I can't remember if it's supposed to be Cinderella or the baker's wife or whomever, but one of them says, "Opportunity is not a lengthy visitor." And that is a line that I have used as a bit of a mantra, low key, for anytime I come across some of the stuff, is that opportunity is not going to stick around for very long. I would have an easier time living with myself if I tried and didn't get it.
Do you bring that mantra into your class?
I try to. Some days it works better than others.
What does it look like?
From a fine arts perspective, it looks like the mantra in improv of saying yes or saying yes and. So if a kid...
I love that. Yes, and.
It's a tricky,
I love that.
It's a tricky balance. Oh, yeah. Ask any actor. That's your most basic tenet of improv. You have to say yes and to your partner.
Yeah.
But so what it looks like in the classroom could be, just last week, we were gearing up for some Valentine's Day stuff. And I actually did a little spiritual with the kids, like a spiritual song with some of my grade ones. And I explained some of the history behind it in a way that would be, I hope, accessible to them, and have talked a bit about it. And then I brought up spirituals were often used as like code songs. So you think about the spiritual Follow the Drinking Gourd, which is actually like a map of the Underground Railroad and people trying to escape from the Deep South back in the day, back in the 19th century. And the grade ones were like, whoa. And they were like, can we hear another spiritual? I was like, yeah, sure. I had something else planned, but whatever, we'll get to it later. If your kids give you an opportunity to say yes and in a sense like that, they're buying in. They want to know more.
Yeah.
And I think as educators, I know we have assessments to do, and I know we have marking to do. I'm going to go do some marking after I'm done recording this.
You have my permission to take the night off. You tell whoever your admin is that we're taking the night off.
Oh, no, it's totally me. It's totally me pressuring me to do this. But I know how busy our lives are, and I know how much pressure there is. And my goodness, I know that I suffer from that as much as anybody. But that ability to say yes and to your kids. If my kids want to take me on a little if my kids have a weird question about, we had a question, we were doing graphing and patterns today, and there was one... I was like, this person smiled this many times in the first hour, the second hour. It's arithmetic sequences, right? So it's decreasing and she's smiling less every hour. And it's, why do you think that is? And we got on and we started talking about, maybe she's really tired. Maybe she's been working a lot, or, and just like getting, they're asking questions about that aren't necessarily about the math itself, but they're asking those questions about, why is it happening this way? And we actually had a really funny one where we looked at days it was sunny. And this person graphing how many days it was sunny in June, July, August. And we could see it was decreasing every day. And by November, it was like zero. And then my one math whiz in the back of the class, does that mean December is going to be -2? Is it going to be -2 negative? What does -2 sunny days in a month look like? And I looked at them and was like, I don't know, guys. And so we started talking about it for a second. We're like, does that mean the sun doesn't rise at all those days? And it's not even cloudy. It's just completely dark. So just like the kids, like they're engaging with the material. And of course, we do eventually have to get back onto the actual skill of how to graph this properly. But just having that moment of levity with them and giving them an opportunity to just ask slightly silly questions almost, but like questions that are silly, but not like not in a like in a good faith way, I guess I should say.
Yeah. And the best part about yes and is when a kid does it.
Yes. And it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I know that you have really connected and brought that mantra in when you have the buy-in from the students, not necessarily in that curriculum showing, but in that language and that belief in themselves where they're now saying yes and.
And I'll say I am so blessed at the school I currently work at in that I have an amazing crew of teachers. I don't know if you actually know this. I have it's a very unusual setup in that I will be 37 years old in a week or so. And I am the youngest teacher on that staff. Our average level of experience at that school is 20 years of teaching.
Wow.
Or more. And I am so proud to work with those people. And I am so in awe of a lot of my coworkers. I know I'm talking a good game right now, but you should see the people I work with.
Yeah.
They're incredible. Like my That's next amazing. Door neighbor is just a boss at everything she does.
Yeah. So. Wow. You know what, Jeff? This has been so awesome to hear the story and to hear where you came from, that risk you took, how you overcame that risk, and where things are going now with you. And it makes me so happy to hear that you're in a good place. Along the way, and in those tough moments, who or what did you look for inspiration?
Ooh, that is a really good question. Because it's nebulous. It changes, I think, depending on the situation. I'm often inspired. I think I mentioned this. I'm often inspired by the people I work with. I'm inspired at times by the legend is not the word, but the story of my grandfather, my dad's dad, who was a vice principal for a very long time on the West Coast in BC and did some incredible things. I often take inspiration from him as both as a fine arts person and as an educator. And it's one of the only regrets I have in my career in that sense is that he passed away almost 7 years ago now, but he was in decline for quite a while, and he and I never actually got the chance to talk educator to educator, which was a shame. But he's someone I draw inspiration from. I draw inspiration from some of the other music teachers I know. There's one I can think of that you and I have both worked with during our time in this division, who is just blows me away in everything he does. And yeah, like honestly, a lot of it is the people I work with. I am very lucky to work with an incredible group of people, both like in my own school and around my division. There are some wonderful people.
Jeff, what you're saying is so powerful too, because you choose to make them amazing people. You choose to view them as amazing people, and you look for the good in the people that are around you. And that's such a strength and such a quality. With all that in mind, what's next for Jeff? Where are we going?
That's a really good question.
Skydiving? Is that where we're going?
I've done indoor skydiving. I don't know that you will get me out of a plane because of the time of life I'm in now. I have gone bungee jumping before.
We have gone from when this was brought up 30 minutes ago to a hard no to an I don't know. So this is progress along the way.
Oh, I see what you did there. Shoot. Yeah. In terms of my career, it's been an interesting few years because I've now transitioned just because of the way that the things shook out. I am no longer doing the CTF part of that job, but I am now in a homeroom position, which is its own challenges. And actually that was really cool because last year when I was doing a 3-4 split, I often remarked it was the first year I taught in a homeroom where I actually felt like I was finally starting to get my sea legs. And I was in like year 13 of teaching and year 3 or 4 as a homeroom teacher. I was finally feeling like I was starting to get my sea legs on that. Where I go from here, it's hard to say. I'm pretty sure that I'll think of a plan either as soon as this podcast is over, or I will tell you a plan. And then tomorrow my admin will tell me that everything is blowing up and we're doing it differently, because that's how our careers go. Or that's how
naturally.
There are things I want to do to grow the music program at my school that I'm only just now able to wrap my head around with what I actually want with that. Because I've done the same thing for several years in a row there now. And while I'm happy for the most part with how that's gone, I want to grow it. I want to give the kids new and different stuff. I want to show them I want to see how much more I can show them is out there.
Not only that, though, this is such a good opportunity to talk about something so incredible you're doing in your community, because you're not just doing music in school, Jeff. I know it's not just in school. So what's going on for you outside of that?
Okay. Last summer, so I'm involved in the local music society here in our little area. And until recently, I was actually vice president on their board of directors, sang in many of their groups. They've got several choirs and an orchestra. So shout out to the Foothills Philharmonic Society. Last summer, I finally got the ball rolling on a project I'd been thinking about for some years, which was starting a children's choir. And there had been one here previously, and it was killed by COVID, unfortunately. we just didn't have the brain space or the capacity or frankly the kids anymore to come back and work with for a while. And so last year, I finally got the ball rolling on that again. And again, I was very lucky to have an awesome co-director previously who showed me the ropes on that. And they did not come back on this one with me just because they had moved on in that time of life. And that part of their journey had come, they decided to close the book on that, which I completely understand and respect. And they have been nothing but supportive ever since. But I got together a couple of my choir friends who are parents as well and who had been asking, are you going to do this again? And I asked one of them to help me out, and she has been an incredible help. And we got our old accompanist back, and we had our first rehearsal, what's tomorrow, the 15th? So we had our first rehearsal 4 weeks ago almost now. 4 weeks ago, I think. Yeah. And we have 34 kids between these two choirs.
That's incredible. Wow.
Yeah. And I am blown away. Like, we thought we might get 20. And I can't take all the credit. Some of that is the incredible team that I'm working with on that. But it is, oh man, like that first rehearsal, the accompanist and I looked at each other like we've never left. There was so much joy.
That's amazing. And
even when I'm tired and I drag myself to that rehearsal, I come back feeling better after every rehearsal. And I actually didn't realize until after that first rehearsal was done. Like, I knew I'd missed it. I didn't realize how much I'd missed it. And I didn't realize how much joy that brought to my life.
So anybody that's looking in the Foothills area to get involved in this, how can they get a hold of you to join in?
So you can go to our website, first of all, the site is www.footfill.com. And you can click from there to join one of our ensembles. The children's chorus in particular is called the Junior Singer. But there's also, we have a mass adult choir. We have a smaller chamber choir. If you're an experienced singer and want something that's more of a challenge, that's where I tend to run these days. Keeps me sharp. We have a jazz ensemble. We have a men's chorus. We have an orchestra. That's what I was forgetting. We have an orchestra. And oh my gosh, the amount of work they have put into that to build from the ground up over the last 7 or 8 years is incredible. Like, they've done some really cool stuff. I think they're doing Beethoven 5 later this spring. Yeah.
And that's www.footphil.com. Foot Phil. Yeah. Awesome. Okay.
They are a wonderful group of musicians, and I can't recommend a better community of music makers to work with.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jeff. Before we wrap up today, we've covered so much. What advice would you give to anybody that's sitting in Ontario, looking at that Alberta job? That's a metaphor. Maybe they're sitting somewhere else, looking somewhere else. What advice do you have for those people that are thinking about that leap, or that are thinking about that contract that they were just offered, or that choice they have to make that they want, but they're not sure they want? What advice are we giving here?
Opportunity is not a lengthy visitor.
I love that.
You will always think at least a little bit about it if you don't try. And it's scary and it's tough. And sometimes you just got to take that jump sometimes. Take the opportunity when it comes up, because if you don't, somebody else will.
Absolutely. Hey, Jeff, it's been an absolute pleasure of mine to sit down with you and connect again. Longtime friend here. It's nice to finally have a visit with each other. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your evening.
Anytime, buddy. I'm so touched that you thought of me for this.
I couldn't think of a better person.
Thank you. And I am so glad we finally got the chance to sit down and connect again. It has been far too long.
You've been listening to The Elemental Educator. Our aim is to illuminate optimal educational practices on a global scale. And second, we want to shine a light on the expertise and knowledge that Tyler brings to educational institutions. He's not just a talking head. He's a practicing educator, a school principal, armed with a master's in educational administration, and on the brink of completing his doctorate. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, review, and subscribe. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find us on Instagram, Facebook, and X at Elemental Educator. And to contact us, fire off an email. See what I did there? Fire off. Okay. Send an email to elementaleducator@gmail.com. See you next time on The Elemental Educator.